Welcome to 90.5 WESA's Mayoral Candidate Forum. I'm Kevin Gavin. Voters in Pittsburgh Tuesday will elect nominees to be the next leader of our city. We've invited the four active candidates seeking the Democratic nomination in Tuesday's primary. Josh Wander is unopposed to the Republican nomination. The candidates will have 90 seconds apiece to answer each question. Follow-ups, 60 seconds. After time elapses, I will have to halt their answers. Please hold your applause until all the candidates have been introduced, and please do not applaud after candidates' responses. We'd like to give those candidates an opportunity to answer as many questions as possible in our allotted program time. The candidates appearing at this forum are Pittsburgh Councilman William Peduto, former Pennsylvania Auditor General Jack Wagner, and State Representative Jake Wheatley. There are no opening statements. After the final question, each candidate will have 90 seconds for final remarks. So let's begin with the first question. The order to respond has been determined by lots. The city of Pittsburgh has been under state fiscal oversight for more than 9 years under Act 47. 6 months ago, the city petitioned for removal from oversight. The Secretary of Community and Economic Development has yet to decide, but is expected to approve the request. Once the city comes out from Act 47, what would you do as mayor to grow the city while not falling into the practices that led to that designation of financially distressed? The first answer comes from Mr. Wagner.
Well, first and foremost, I appreciate this forum this evening, and I appreciate that question because it is a very important question to the future of our city. As Auditor General of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, I bring the expertise I believe necessary to not only get Pittsburgh out of Act 47, but to keep it from falling back into Act 47. The city of Pittsburgh, first and foremost, has to have its own fiscal house in order. And there are still many additional things that can be done by the city itself to economize how we operate. The example I have used repeatedly is the police accepting $10 million in checks and the big embarrassment that the city has experienced in the last several months. The city of Pittsburgh the Bureau of Police should not be handling checks. The Department of Finance should be. So we need to get our own house in order as to how we economize our own operations. I don't want two city police officers handling checks. They should be on the streets of Pittsburgh. I could give you numerous other examples of things we can do, such as filing your income taxes. You can file them electronically, but you cannot pay your income taxes electronically. We can consolidate certain services with county government, such as your property tax bills. You receive multiple property tax bills today. Pardon me?
Thank you, Mr. Wagner. Mr. Peduto, 90 seconds.
First off, I'm not, as the Democratic nominee, I petitioned the governor directly to make sure that we do not leave Act 47. I was the only elected official to speak to the secretary to explain that we're not ready to leave Act 47. We're like the patient on the operating room table that's saying, honest, doc, I feel great. I'm ready to go home. We have benchmarks in our five-year plan that we haven't even started on. In fact, we've only hit 27% of them, and 27% is not an A in my book. So, you know, there are big projects that need to be done. We need to have a facilities management plan, basically looking at all the property the city owns, deciding which ones we need to keep, and then creating energy saving programs for each property. We need to do the same thing with fleet. We don't even have a plan for when we buy police cars, let alone anything that we do with our automobiles. All of the big ticket items under the five-year plan have yet to be even undertaken. So we're not in any way ready to do it. Now, there is light at the end of the tunnel, and that is 2018, when our debt falls from about $90 million a year that we have to pay down to a more manageable $50 million a year. And we need to create a benchmark system between now and 2018 so that when we do get out of Act 47 and we do our last finance five-year plan, which will be our exit strategy plan, that we have a city that has a sustainable budget for the next 10 years. And that is very, very possible.
Thank you, Mr. Peduto. 90 seconds, Mr. Wheatley.
Thank you. As the only member on this panel that served in the state committee to actually put us into the Act 47 and to vote for the plan for the bailout of the city, I will tell you, I think the city has come a long way from where we were. The only reason people would not want to see us come out of Act 47 is because it will take leadership to keep our obligations down. The one benefit that we've had from Act 47 is that, one, we've gotten additional state resources, but two, we've gotten the ability to get our hands over the collective bargaining process. And the next mayor will certainly have to deal with our largest public unions, and particularly our public safety unions. And I think the future of our city requires us to be able to hold down our obligations and to be financial stewards of the city. And one of the things that we've talked about all along moving forward, we talked about creating new opportunities with energy performance contracting that can guarantee 30 to 33% savings on all of our energy consumption that we then can pour back into our general fund and either making our buildings and our facilities more efficient and or investing in innovations and creation and in creating new forms of energy production. We've also talked about social impact bonding that will take some pressure, alleviate some pressure from our budget. We also talk about real partnerships with long-term with our not-for-profits.
Thank you, Mr. Wheatley. Next question. For decades, there have been many proposals to how best connect the second most congested area in Pennsylvania, downtown Pittsburgh, with the third most congested, Oakland. Do you favor a bus rapid transit system, such as the East Busway, a light rail connection, or something else? And the first answer will come from Mr. Peduto.
Well, I support a bus rapid transit system because we've been in communication with the community now for over 2 years. Numerous meetings have been happening, not only between the universities and the hospitals and the downtown corporate community, but also with the people who live in the area. And the BRT recently received funding, a national foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, putting money in to see it happen. It's the most cost-effective way of connecting downtown to Oakland and the most feasible since we don't have any source of revenue for capital improvements for transit yet. So what would it look like? It would look much different than the MLK busway because the BRT system is more like a bullet train than it is like a bus. It's a modern system that operates in a contained area and with limited stops. But we have to make sure some of those limited stops happen between Oakland and downtown and use transit-oriented development as an option to help to build uptown and the hill and rebuild it around those stops. We have an opportunity to do this. What I'd also like to see is a north-south route. North-south's very hard to get to in the city, and we have old abandoned rail lines, one, the Allegheny Valley Rail Line from Hazelwood to Lawrenceville, that could combine and tap into not only the BRT but the MLK busway as well, and in between the rivers be able to create a new option of a multimodal transportation system which would be affordable, effective, and could be done in the next few years.
Thank you. Mr. Wheatley, 90 seconds.
I mean, I've supported the bus rapid transit system and will continue to support it. And I've been out front talking about creating a real regional system because we can't just worry about getting people to and from our two largest economic centers. We have to get people who are sometimes displaced and marginalized to and from where they need to go as well. So we really do need to create a real multimodal integrated system that creates a regional system that's truly similar to SEPTA. But how do you pay for it? I mean, that's been the real issue that no one seems to care about and ask. I mean, we've tossed out a lot of great ideas of what we want to do, but the real work comes in, how do we pay for it? And I've said this all along. I think at the state level, my experience dealing with the process in the General Assembly, I know that there is some interest to create this regional system. One of the things that is a barrier are our legacy costs from our Port Authority and the governance of our Port Authority. We also have to take a stance around how we see ourselves in the future. The city of Pittsburgh is the seat of our county and our region, but it's not the only important voice. So we have to be willing to share in how we make these decisions regionally. And so with that being said, I think there's opportunities, but we have to make sure that the new system that we create isn't subsidized by those who are least able to pay for it, that gets everyone to and from where we need them to go, and that it truly is a regional system.
Thank you. Mr. Wagner, 90 seconds.
Downtown Pittsburgh to Oakland must be the top priority, but it should just not be Oakland. It should be the High Technology Center along 2nd Avenue. And yes, to here, the South Side, the South Side Flats, somewhere in the area of the Hot Metal Bridge, which incidentally is a bridge that when I was on City Council 20 years ago, I said it should be abandoned as a railroad bridge and should be a vehicular and a pedestrian bridge. And I'm very proud of that. But in addition to Southside Flats, the new Almano site in Hazelwood, and points east beyond Oakland to Squirrel Hill, all of that should be a priority. I support the bus rapid transit, but I am not going to push aside the light rail possibility also or some other technology that could work. So that has to be a priority because Oakland is the educational center. Oakland is the medical center. Oakland is the cultural center of our city, and it has been ignored in the past. But I want to go one step further. I want to see a transit center in downtown Pittsburgh. We have busways today that do not interconnect with the light rail transit system, that do not interconnect with other busways, the South Busway, the West Busway. That needs to be a priority, and it takes the leadership of a mayor. More importantly, the city of Pittsburgh should have a position on the Port Authority of Allegheny County Board.
Thank you. Next question. There's a perception of cronyism in city government and related agencies. Now there's concern about corruption with the indictment of the former police chief, Mr. Harper. What will you do to address these concerns? And the first to answer this question is Mr. Wheatley.
Well, we've talked about changing politics as usual, not having to have to know someone downtown in order to get services from downtown. And the way that we've kind of approached this subject matter and how we've done it over 10 years is we actually believe government belongs to people. It doesn't belong to us. We're just stewards of it, momentary stewards. And so we have to make government more transparent, more open, more accessible. We have to do it in a way that utilizes all of our technological resources. But we also have to trust that 90% of or more of our city employees are just hardworking men and women trying to provide for themselves and their family. So the scandals that we hear about aren't indicative of the whole process, but they're structures, they're institutional structures that have allowed to been fester and to have created where you have individuals who have taken advantage of the system and have now marginalized all of the good citizens of Pittsburgh. And so one of the things we would do is go in and systematically change the culture of government. We won't just come in and remove everyone who's in position now, because not every one of them are terrible people and not every one of them are doing a terrible job. But we will open up government. We talked about making sure you will know where your senior staff and your mayor is at all time with GPS tracking systems, so you can go online and find out what meetings we're taking on your behalf. And if you have a problem, you've called 311 system and it hasn't been responded to in a timely fashion, you can find out where the supervisors are so you can show up in your neighborhood and complain to them.
Thank you, Mr. Wheatley. Mr. Peduto is next.
Whenever I hear this question, I just always go back to that old line, gambling in Casablanca? I'm shocked. It's a lot worse, actually, than people know. I mean, the reports that come in the papers and radio and TV only deal with the symptoms. It goes much, much deeper. And I've been down there for 19 years, and I can tell you it's the worst that I've ever seen. You know, there is a division in council, and there are those that enable it to continue and those that fight against it. I'm honored to have the support of people like Patrick Dowd and Natalia Rudiak and Bruce Krause. And we've been up against this, basically, the 21st century model political machine. It's a power system. It's not about who, it's not about what is the idea or what is the project, but who is behind it and whether that person bought enough tickets to the last fundraiser. It's not about the need of the street to get paved, but who lives on the street. It's an entire system that enables a continuance of power, and it has to go. It's the last vestige of the old political machine, and I assure you that next Wednesday, the light will start to shine, and that system will start to leave. That's when Pittsburgh starts to hit its greatness, when we're able to take a city government that is basically antiquated with an old power structure and turn that system upside down to create a new decentralized power structure within City Hall.
Thank you. Mr. Wagner, 90 seconds.
It's hard to fix the problem if you're part of the problem. And unfortunately, that's what exists in city government today. City government is a government that is dysfunctional. It has not worked in the past. Council has not provided the leadership to correct it, and we all know that. And let me give you one salient example. The Bureau of Building Inspection. We have many, many problems in the Bureau of Building Inspection, but first and foremost, it's leadership. There is no director of the Bureau of Building Inspection, and there hasn't been one for 3 years. 3 years. Even though there's an ordinance in place that directs city council to act if the mayor's office doesn't act in 90 days. 2.5 years plus, city council hasn't even acted to correct that problem. Even though the Bureau of Building Inspection continues to show flaws in numerous ways with derelict buildings throughout the city that haven't been corrected in terms of approval process, no time frame for that to happen. I could go on and on. You can't use a credit card in the Bureau of Building Inspection. The city of Pittsburgh has structural problems. I've been your auditor general for the last 8 years, and I've made recommendation after recommendation on how to improve state government, and in many areas, it is night and day better today than before.
Thank you. If you're elected, you will appoint the next police chief of the city of Pittsburgh. So should that selection come from inside the ranks or outside? And what qualities are a must in the next chief? We start with Mr. Wagner, 90 seconds.
The quality that is first and foremost is professionalism. It's someone that wears professionalism on their sleeve. And I, as mayor of the city of Pittsburgh, will pick the finest person I can pick to be your police chief. I want a police chief that's out on the streets. I want a police chief that the other police officers respect. More importantly, I want a police bureau that reflects Pittsburgh, that reflects the diversity of Pittsburgh. In the last 10 years, there have been 400 police officers hired. Only 17 have been minorities. 17. The administration and city council have done virtually nothing to correct that problem. Where am I going to find my police chief? First and foremost, I'll look from within. I'm a Marine. I was in the Marine Corps. I know what spirit the Corps is all about. I know what promotion from within is all about. So I'll first and foremost look for a professional from within. If I can't find the person within, I'll find them outside the police bureau. But we need to first and foremost have a police chief that's on the streets of Pittsburgh. When I'm your mayor, I'm going to be on the streets of Pittsburgh. So is the police chief. So are the commanders. So are the lieutenants. We're going to have community-oriented policing. And that's going to begin first and foremost with the mayor and the chief of police.
Thank you. Mr. Wheatley, 90 seconds, please.
Sure. First of all, I think the new chief has to have professional, ethical, and above reproach approach history of being able to manage large departments in this situation, because whenever you have such a scandalous situation that breaks in a city, in order to reestablish confidence and trust in the government, we need to show complete removal of anything that would lead to suspicion of the same things happening or being allowed to happen. So structurally, we know we have to revamp the whole culture inside of not only our police department, but how we operate city government in general. But I'm a firm believer that we do have to do a national search, but we should not be so angry at the internal structure that we will not allow for growth for someone to come out of this current system. Now, I will tell you that under our current system, we have a dramatic cultural shift that needs to happen inside of our department, because if we're not supporting the officers that are already there, meaning there are women and minority officers that are already there that are being abandoned right now, and if we're talking about growing our force, making our force reflect more of the city's population, and even finding a new chief, we have to have a chief that's willing to go in there and to really change culture in the police department and also reestablish positive community relationships in many of our neighborhoods.
Thank you. Mr. Peduto.
The characteristic I'll look at most is integrity. There's two different paths that need to be filled, or two different paths that you'll have to walk down in this process. The one is within the community and restoring trust. and the other is within the Bureau itself in restoring morale. We lost both, and both are suffering right now. So there have been examples where other cities like Minneapolis have taken on a role like this, and there are criteria that are set up on, you know, what a police chief should have, what type of education, what type of training, how many years on the force, how many different opportunities to do different types of specialized training. And then there's a different side. It's what does the community believe a police chief should be? And I'll mix both of those. I want to hire the police chief when I first come in. I'll hire a public safety director who has a law enforcement background when I first come in. But over the first several months, we'll have this community discussion about it. And I'll look nationally. If people within the Bureau right now want to apply, they'll be welcome to apply. But the search is going to be very, very broad. We need to do a lot of healing within the police Bureau, both within the Bureau itself and throughout our community.
A follow-up question regarding the police department, and these answers will be 60 seconds long, please. How do you propose to improve the trust and cooperation between the city police and the African-American community? We start with Mr. Peduto.
Communication, and basically not only the police chief, but his boss or her boss, me, public safety director, and then also right down to the zone command. So when I talk about decentralizing power, that's a really good example of what you can look at within public safety. A lot of decisions that zone commanders are given through the Northside headquarters and not directly through the zone command. I want to decentralize that as well and give commanders more of an opportunity. After Providence, Rhode Island went into a crisis when their police chief and their mayor were indicted, they hired a police chief, and one of the first things he did was met with the lieutenants and said, what is it that you need? And they came up with a new system. Within the African-American community, we need not only to have a system that is communicating on a daily basis, but also the presence of the people who are making decisions directly with the community.
Thank you. Mr. Wheatley, 60 seconds, please.
First of all, you can't build positive relationships if you have antagonistic experience. And so the very first thing we need to do is change the way that police in neighborhoods that are predominantly African American. We cannot have police beating innocent citizens and then there is no repercussion or there is no change in culture, because you will never establish relationships that will be positive. We've talked about simple things to do. We want to put more officers on the street, but not just have you in the presence of the from a militaristic presence, but have you integrated in helping the community in what it's trying to do. And so we talk about police athletic leagues, assigning several officers to zones that are working with families and children through their sporting activities. So you see positive relationships being established and built upon. You even can have access to recruitment of more minority candidates. And also it's a law enforcement strategy. So we think things like that would be very helpful.
Thank you. And Mr. Wagner, please, 60 seconds.
Sensitivity training for the entire police bureau, beginning with the public safety director who oversees the police chief and reports to the mayor. And for some reason, that's lost in the whole discussion of accountability here. Well, it won't be if I'm mayor. The public safety director also must be accountable. But the police chief must be accountable. But we need sensitivity training in the city. Sensitivity related to the African-American community, to the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community, to the Asian community, the Latino community, and I could go on and on. When I'm mayor, you're going to also have a couple detectives that are exclusively working on domestic violence issues. You know, we don't have that training for specific officers within the police bureau now. That's going to change when I'm mayor.
Thank you. I'm pairing together two questions for this next one. 5 years ago, a Citizens Advisory Committee appointed by Mayor Luke Ravenstahl and then County Executive Dan Honorato recommended that the city and county go beyond a few shared services and actually consolidate the city and county governments, not the other municipalities, but for greater efficiency. Luke Ravenstahl and Dan Honorato then endorsed the idea, but it has not gone anywhere. So, do you support a consolidation of city and county governments, and why or why not? And the second part comes from an audience member, David in Squirrel Hill, who says, shouldn't the approach be what's best for the city is then best for the region? And we start with Mr. Wheatley.
Well, I will take Professor David Miller's approach first and not go to city county, but go to those surrounding municipalities that are abutting the city that has total, I think he said the number is 75% of the county's population and has more similarities with the city of Pittsburgh as a way to, if we're going to talk merger and shared services, as a way to really get to that. But more importantly, I think there are some things we can do right off bat to really try to make ourselves more efficient and save our taxpayers some resources. That's the economic development. We should have a combined shared economic development director and strategy. Our purchasing, and I've said this on every forum I've been in, as long as the county is willing to share the resources of building small businesses, particularly minority and women-owned businesses, we share our purchasing. We can save resources there. I think combining or figuring out a way to coordinate public safety so that we are sharing our public safety. That's not saying we're getting rid of our police department or our fire department, but we share how we disperse them around the county and the region. I think that's a way that we can save taxpayers' resources, as well as I think as we look long term, we have to talk about our educational delivery system and how we share in that, meaning school districts. Again, I know this is a touchy subject, but how we combine and share educational resources so that we, as a region, really move forward into the future.
Thank you. Mr. Wagner, you're next.
As a state senator, myself and Greg Feit, many of you may remember Greg, he was the deputy to Governor Rendell, worked when he was a House member on forming the 911 merger between the city and the county. It has worked very well and is in the best interest of the public and public safety. In order for the city and the county to merge, it requires a referendum to be passed by the city of Pittsburgh and the county of Allegheny. It's not going to happen. I can tell you that right now. But that should not deter us from continuing to merge services such as 911. When we have roads within the city that Allegheny County paves and maintains, that's absolutely ridiculous. We should be taking over a portion of their services, and then they should be doing other things for us. I mentioned earlier a couple areas that can be consolidated. Do you know you receive duplicate tax bills from the county property tax and the city of Pittsburgh? They should be merged, and the money simply dispersed to the city, the school district, and the county. Payroll is separate. That can be merged. What Jake indicated in terms of general services, public works, we can go on and on and on. We have to be aggressive, and we have to make that happen.
Thank you. And Mr. Peduto, 90 seconds.
So I don't support the idea whatsoever. I think it was a really bad idea. And that's just not me. That is national experts on regional governance who stated that whenever you're looking at models of merging, it should be that the majority of the population is merged into whatever it is you're creating, not the minority of the population. And the argument that they made was, well, look at Louisville, Kentucky, and Jefferson County. Louisville was a minority part, but what they had was unincorporated land. And when you added the unincorporated land and the people who lived there with the citizens of Louisville, you actually had the majority. You create a minority rule over a majority rule that doesn't live within the city governing the people who do live in the city. That's just not a fair system. So I do support shared services. One of the things that makes us Western Pennsylvanians is that we're so parochial. You know, we have to have our own police force, have to have its own colors in the cars and makes parades beautiful, but it's also dysfunctional as the most fractionalized government system. So you provide incentives to use non-uniform services at a county level, and you make it the model between the city and the county cooperatively working together to do it. It's not that your police will be merged, but your systems that operate your payroll, your systems that operate the different components of it. You merge big items with the county, like our county rad parks, and give it the opportunity to create a world-class system. And yes, you merge purchasing to save taxpayers money.
Thank you. And we have a follow-up now. 60-second answers, please. This is from a member of our audience, Preston Scheimer. He asks, what is the most important issue that concerns you about the communities immediately adjacent to the city of Pittsburgh? And we start with Mr. Peduto.
Combined sewer overflow, which is going to be the largest issue that we face in our lifetime, the most public money that's going to be assessed to it. In the system that we're promoting right now, it comes out of a playbook from 1958. I mean, it's two big, huge septic tanks underneath the river. When other cities like Cleveland and Philadelphia are kicking our butt by coming up with green solutions. So what I want to do as the mayor is create a green solution to it that works through our PWSA and then work with the 32 communities around the city of Pittsburgh and sell to them that same game plan so that we aren't just putting the water and sewer water and rainwater together into our rivers, but we're keeping the rainwater from ever going into the system to begin with.
Thank you. Mr. Wagner, 60 seconds, please.
I agree. It's that combined sewer overflow issue and plan. It is a $2 to $3 billion expenditure. It doesn't need to be that. It needs to be done in a far more practical way with green technology incorporated with it. I have said repeatedly, and some are tired of hearing me say it, but you have to divide the downspouts from the sewer system. And you have to do that at the source. And we need to create incentives for individual homeowners and property owners to do that. We also can use the rain barrels. I have done this in my own home in Beachview. That's 102 years old. I have actually done it myself, redirecting the downspouts where the rhododendrons are. And if I can do it with my little knowledge of plumbing, others can do it by simply designing into and giving them assistance
Thank
in
you.
The process.
Thank you, Mr. Wagner. Mr. Wheatley, 60 seconds.
I would have to tell you that I think the surrounding neighborhoods that are immediately abutting the city of Pittsburgh has an economic and educational pressing issue. And that's one of the reasons why we've been very consistent and aggressive around talking about eradication of poverty, not just in the city, but in the region. Because if we're going to really truly be a region that's growing and moving, then we have to do something about bringing the bottom up. And the bottom starts to come up when we really have educational institutions that are developing skills and talents for the 21st century, and that we have economic systems that are fully open and fair for all citizens to progress through it. And so that would be the most pressing issues, I think, in our region and those surrounding communities.
Thank you, sir. Next question, 90-second answers, please, gentlemen. The Ravenstahl administration has filed suit challenging UPMC's status as a public charity. Would you sue large nonprofits challenging their tax-exempt status? And what approach would you take in getting the large nonprofits to pay for city services? We start with Mr. Wagner.
This initiative started 25 years ago with Mayor Caligiuri. And Mayor Caligiuri back then sat down with the nonprofits and worked out an arrangement for the profitable nonprofits, and let me stress that, profitable nonprofits, to pay their fair share. That still needs to be done today. And right now that's gridlock. And as mayor, I would take an aggressive posture to make sure that the profitable nonprofits pay their fair share. And unfortunately, that isn't happening today. UPMC is not the Little Sisters of the Poor. They are not the homeless, the Children's Homeless Fund. They, on average, have made approximately $500 million a year for the last 2 years. It has been estimated that they should be paying $20 million in taxes, a combination of payroll and property taxes. We have to get the profitable nonprofits to pay their fair share for policing, for firefighting services, for paramedic services. We are delivering patients to those hospitals. So they need to kick in a little bit more than they are today. As mayor, I will be the lead person to make that happen.
Thank you. Mr. Wheatley.
Yes. Again, let me try to crystallize a difference in how we've approached things for 10 years and how we think moving the city from our perspective would work. We don't think attacking those institutions and people who have been beneficial to helping us get to the point that we are today is the best measure. Now, that's not to say that our large employers shouldn't reflect the values in the system that we want to see, so they should respect the workers and make sure those workers who are part of their system are being treated fairly. But we've always talked about coming together with our large nonprofits, sitting back with them, because we've heard time and again that they don't want to just put more additional money into a general fund that they have no real say in how it's being redirected. We say bring them to the table. Look at our long-term future obligation with our pension and our liability system. Ask them that when in the late 90s they were paying collectively something close to $10 million. Today they are under $3 million, $2.3 million to be exact. If we can get them to dedicate a fund of sorts that will go pay for our long-term pension liability costs that is directly a benefit to them and their citizens, their workers and their employees, I think that's a selling point. And we've seen that done with UPMC from the Pittsburgh Promise. Now we can take it to the table with all of our large nonprofits and say to them, collectively, help us resolve an economic issue that we can all move for. And by the way, we won't come back 10 years from now and say, oh, you have to do additionally another $10 or $20 million for something else.
Thank you. Mr. Peduto.
Yes, I will keep the lawsuit going. It's 30 years now of a process. It started back in the day when there was a confusion over what a purely public charity was because it wasn't defined in the Pennsylvania Constitution. And the HUP test was created. The HUP test was five different criteria in order to determine whether a nonprofit met the goals of a charity. And then Act 55 came along through the state, and that basically took away the powers of a municipality to be able to get those pilot payments that Jake was talking about. And now we find ourselves, after a Supreme Court decision last year, municipalities have the ability to question whether or not if a nonprofit doesn't meet the HUP test, then they should be paying taxes. It's the law, and we're testing the law. My approach would be a little bit different because I think if you're going to use that as the measuring stick, then that measuring stick has to be applied equally across the board. 95-98% of nonprofits in the city are purely public charities. So they wouldn't even have to worry about it because their entire mission is charity work. Others, the large ones, would have to be able to prove it. And I would work with the county executive in order to make sure that process goes through the Office of Property Assessment, where it should happen at, making sure that as part of the tax exemption process, that an application form proving that you qualify and meet the HUP test is a part of it. And then use our law department to make sure that they actually do.
Thank you. 90-second answers, gentlemen. Each of you during this campaign has talked about improving the education process to make sure our children are prepared for the future. But since the Pittsburgh Public School District has a separate budget and separate independent governance, what can the mayor really do, and what would you do? We start with Mr. Wagner.
The mayor can do a number of things. First and foremost, work with the superintendent, Linda Lane, in terms of her lobbying at the state and federal level. Whether that's for new legislation, whether that's for additional resources, whether it's for something that I pursued as the Auditor General to change the funding formula for charter and cyber charter schools to make sure that only the amount necessary is going to educate the children. So there's a number of different fronts in which the mayor can work with the superintendent and the Pittsburgh School Board. In addition to that, the mayor has to be one of the strongest advocates for a strong public education system in the city of Pittsburgh. I graduated from a Pittsburgh public high school, South Hills Public High School. My two children went to Banksville Elementary School. We have good schools in the city of Pittsburgh. But we have to continue to work to keep them good and to improve them and to keep key schools open. More importantly, there's a component of the educational system that there needs to be a greater priority, early childhood education, to get kids prepared for school, to make sure that they're not behind the first day they're in school, to keep them from dropping out of school later.
Thank you. Mr. Peduto.
Well, you know what? Those little Pittsburghers are ours, except for the time that they're in that school building. So it's our job to make sure that they have a safe environment that gets them there, that we coordinate police services with the schools the same way we do with neighborhood business districts or churches or synagogues or even the Islamic Center in Pittsburgh, that the schools and the training of the teachers All are coordinated and technology is utilized. We also have the opportunity to go beyond, to create a model where early childhood initiatives are actually being funded partly by our city community development block grants and then looking for foundations and others to match it. We know that there are 10,000 kids between the ages of 1 and 5, and about half of them have some sort of education during that time period. The other half have none. And guess what? They're the ones that drop out. They're the ones that are never promise ready. I want to create a baby promise program and with a goal of making sure that every child has an opportunity for early childhood education so every child starts out of the gate equally. And then I want to look at the hours when they're ours again, when they leave school, the time between 3 to 6, the opportunities to have programs during the summer, different ways that we can complement young people's lives in order to give them a chance later on. A lot of this is long-term planning, but a lot of it is absolutely critical, even at this moment, to keep kids from getting in trouble.
Thank you. Mr. Wheatley.
Well, as a 10-year veteran of the wars of education, funding, and setting of policy in Harrisburg, I'll tell you, I am intimately supportive, and my record is clear on what we think about education and how we fought for it over the last 10 years. And as the mayor, I will continue to be a strong advocate, because we cannot talk about the future of the city and not talk about our educational output. Now I'm going to back up. What I've talked about in education hasn't been anything that was dealing with setting their policy. What I've talked about is the partnership. One of the things that I would like to see happen is a more intimately connected partnership, especially around career and technical education, that leads to real pathways for career and skill development. And one of the things that I'm hopeful of before I leave Harrisburg, that we will be given as a district, similar to what Philadelphia has been given, is the ability to create our own charters. And when that is happening, then the district itself can create its charters, and we can get things called industry partnership schools that we can work with the district, bring our business community and nonprofit community together with the district, and create real career pathways for the future workforce. When we have 29,000 regional jobs that are gone unfulfilled for lack of skill development, that tells me we have a mismatch here. So we need to kind of connect that. And I see city government and I see my office as mayor as that connector piece and that strong leader and advocate.
Thank you. This next question is sort of a team effort involving Robert Peterson from Sheridan and also from Matthew Hawkins in our audience. Pitt Center for Urban and Social Research has found that 44% of land parcels, 30% of houses in Homewood are vacant. Pittsburgh Today reports that 42% of lots, houses, and buildings in Larimer are unoccupied. What will you do to address the problem of vacant and abandoned properties in Blight? And how would you revitalize aging neighborhoods? And what is the role of using community development block grants to do all that? And we start with Mr. Peduto.
So three things. I'll try and do this in 1.5 minutes. Number one, housing. The options with housing, our only tool in the toolbox is to go into these neighborhoods and tear the housing down, just to demolish it. And then we create blight through abandoned lots. What I would like to see is housing that is being refurbished, revitalized, and redone by people from the community, men between the ages of 18 and 30, where unemployment rate is skyrocketing, having the opportunity to learn roofing and putting in windows and plumbing and electrical work, in creating programs through nonprofits that partner with the city in order to make it happen. Neighborhood business districts. In every neighborhood that you mentioned, there was a vibrant neighborhood business district. In Homewood, my great-grandfather had a produce stand up until the 1950s. My Uncle Lou, right off of Frankstown, had the Texaco station. That area is decimated. There's very few businesses that are left. Creating small business micro grants in order for allowing businesses that want to move into these neighborhoods to get 1 year free rent in order to be able to do so. We know that's the critical time in a business's life, whether it makes it or not, will give people a hand if they move into these neighborhoods. And three, work to create green areas as part of that combined sewer overflow project that I'm talking about, and create parks in neighborhoods like Larimer and in Homewood and down in Manchester and in Hazelwood, areas that are flat, and then develop housing around that.
People
want to live near parks.
Thank you. Mr. Wheatley.
Okay, so we've been talking about this, but no one has really heard us. For several years, we tried to work with an organization called My Brother's Keepers in Belsouver that was actually on the ground taking individuals, young men from that neighborhood, using them to fix up housing that was in their neighborhood, one, for skill development, two, for a little bit of cash in their pocket to keep them off the street, and then three, hopefully, that they will see a career opportunity because they were attached with a contractor who was overseeing them. That program for several years withered on a vine because even though it was successful, it couldn't get support from city government. So when you talk about CDBG funding and the reallocation, we see that as a vital link because as we talk about eradication of poverty, if we talk about skill development in some of these underserved neighborhoods, as we talk about really trying to change the culture and the fabric in our city, we have to match our actions to our words. When you talk about neighborhoods with vacant lots and vacant buildings, we see them as opportunities. Opportunities to, one, revitalize those neighborhoods by grassroots approaches, but you have to build capacity in those neighborhoods. So you have to have so the workforce is matching some of that advancement. And so I can't finish the whole thing in 90 seconds, but I'm telling you, we have a plan. We have done it before in small works that we've been able to do from a state perspective. And if you elect us as mayor, we will show you in 4 years what you can do with some of these abandoned properties.
Thank you. And Mr. Wagner.
There needs to be economic fairness and justice in terms of how public monies are distributed. First and foremost, with the community development block grant monies, to make sure that the areas they're designated for get those dollars and that they're spent properly. In addition, the city has a capital budget this past year. The communities that get the CDBG monies should not be held back in terms of the capital dollars. The CDBG monies is to help them along. So the capital dollars for road improvement, for parks improvement, for water and sewage improvement needs to be dispersed properly. In addition to those dollars, the same with the authorities in the city of Pittsburgh. We have a Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority. We have a parking authority. We have an urban redevelopment authority that has access to all kinds of revenue sources at the state and federal level. The priorities have to be given to the communities in need. Now the derelict properties. If you have a derelict building, it needs to be torn down. The property needs to be cleaned up. We need to market the property. The city of Pittsburgh is sitting on 35,000 lots it owns. They should be put back on the tax rolls, and that should be done aggressively.
Thank you. Time for our final question. 90-second answers, gentlemen. According to the latest census, about 1 in 5 Pittsburghers, 18.6%, are between 20 and 34 years old. How can Pittsburgh attract and retain individuals in their 20s and 30s? And we start with Mr. Wheatley.
Well, the young man back in the back is a example of that. His name is Arion. Arion was a student over at Pitt, then went to got his master's degree in social work from Pitt. He's originally from Philadelphia. We connected with Arion and others like him, and I think the first thing they will tell you is you have to have career opportunities here if you want to keep them here. But the other thing they will tell you is you have to have social outlets for them. And so Pittsburgh has done a pretty decent job with some, because you're starting to see for the first time young people starting to choose Pittsburgh because of our wonderful institutions, especially our higher ed institution. But it's that second city of Pittsburgh. The young, diverse Pittsburgh, they might come here or they might live here, but they're looking for the first thing smoking out of here. Because unlike the white young professionals and students, they have that social fabric and they have that cultural connection. But that African-American one, they see it as lagging. So the best thing we can do for the future to really make this a dynamic city is to make it a dynamic for all of our young individuals as well as our older individuals. And the only way we can do that is really target in to make sure we are accepting of everyone's culture, everyone's different perspective. And how we would do it as an administration is really we will make sure that you are not connected by who you are and what you are. You're connected by what you know and what you're willing to go after. We'll make sure this city reflects all of its true greatness.
Thank you. Mr. Peduto.
How do you keep 18 to 30-year-olds here or bring them here? You listen. You listen to them. You ask them, what is it that you're looking for? And the first part of it is the same reason that my grandfather came here. It's for a job and to be able to make sure that there is an opportunity to work and stay here. The second part of it, though, is you're also talking about an age group that is the most entrepreneurial. And some people don't want to just go to work for a company. They want to be able to try some things on their own. I think by the time you get, you know, past the back nine of 30s, you're a little more conservative and maybe not willing to take those risks. So you create a city that is a city of entrepreneurism, a city that allows people to have that opportunity to create their own places. We have a lot of empty schools. We should be using them as the way that Andy Warhol created the factory and just throw all those kids in there together, the student with the law degree from Duquesne, with the Art Institute student, with the software engineer from CMU, and let them just make things happen because they will. You need to have areas where they can grow, areas in underserved and under communities that haven't seen development, where their businesses and where life can be there. Different options on housing, lofts, net zero housing, and you have to have connectivity. You know, they're not looking for the same things that business leaders will tell you. They want tax breaks and free parking. They don't even have cars. What they want is the opportunity to have public transit, clean water, and clean air.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wagner.
We have a great attraction force here. It's our universities. In addition to CMU and Pitt and Carlo and Point Park University, today I was at the Art Institute of Pittsburgh. They're attracting people from hundreds of miles away to our city, and they're living here in our city. And they're getting a great education. And we have two of the top 10 research universities in the country in CMU and the University of Pittsburgh. We have tremendous opportunities for technology transfer from CMU. Google is here because of CMU. That's the power of CMU. Biotechnology companies have been formed because of the University of Pittsburgh and the strong medical educational system that is part of it. We need to maximize those opportunities. Sometimes young people coming out of college, all they need is space to start a company. They need a 10 by 12 foot room. Through the Urban Redevelopment Authority, we need to create that opportunity. In addition, workforce development. And Jake referred to it. There are 29,000 jobs that are not filled in this region. Many of them are in the energy industry. We're not training young people for the opportunities associated with energy. Marcellus Shale opportunities in Greene County, Washington County. I can go on and on. We need specific training programs for our youth.
Thank you very much. The candidates now have 90 seconds apiece for closing remarks. The order was determined by lots. Mr. Wheatley goes first.
Thank you. And again, I'm very appreciative for the opportunity. We have 7 days, and I've said this repeatedly. This election is not about any of the men on this panel. This election is about all of you who are citizens of the city of Pittsburgh. If you want your city to ever change from what it has become, a city that you have to know someone, or you have to be politically aligned to someone, or you have to be a part of the who's who of who's endorsing you. If you don't care about the money, the endorsement, and the name recognition, and you only care about the vision of and the future of this city, then on May 21st, you will go into that polling place and pull the lever for Jake Wheatley, because Jake Wheatley will change politics as usual, and it will not be the day of your grandfathers. It'll be the day of you and your children. So I look forward to working with all of you as we move this city forward to truly become the most livable city in America.
Thank you, Mr. Wheatley. And now closing remarks from Mr. Peduto.
Thank you, Kevin, and thank you, WESA. I sit in this beautiful, beautiful building, and I think back to the days that Lee Ferraro was trying to sell me on a vision of the first LEED-certified radio station in America. And certainly public broadcasting has changed quite a bit in 10 years. But so is Pittsburgh. And we're not that city that my grandfather came to work in the mills anymore. In fact, that city's gone. And the question is, what will be the city that we become? Because we have the opportunity to knock it out of the park. We really are. If you think about cities in this country right now that are sitting on the verge of a great potential, of being that next great city, Pittsburgh's at the top of the list. But we're not there, and we keep missing that potential, and it's right out there. And it's not going to be city government that does it. It's going to be the people in this town that have ideas that need assistance from city government. The Chinese philosopher said, a leader walks with the people. And when his work is done, the people say, we did it ourselves. That's what Pittsburgh needs. It needs a new model, not a top-down model that was created during the days of the Industrial Revolution. It needs a mayor and a leadership of government that actually enables people to do great things. There is so much potential in this city, and I see it every day. That's why back in September, I hung up the seat of city council, a job that I love, to do one thing, to build a new Pittsburgh. And I intend to do that, but I need your vote, and I'm asking for it on May 21st.
Thank you. And finally, Mr. Wagner, 90 seconds for your closing remarks.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm running for mayor because I love Pittsburgh. I was born here. I live with my wife and children in the Beachview neighborhood in the same street that I grew up on. I want to make sure this city is moving in the right direction. Presently, city government is broken, and it needs to be fixed. The members of city government have not provided the solutions to move us forward. Recently, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and the Pittsburgh Tribune Review endorsed my candidacy for mayor. They did that for two reasons. First and foremost, they know I bring the experience and the leadership capability to be a mayor. To be able to run a city as an executive and working with others, working with the private sector, working with the nonprofit sector, working with the foundation community, working with the neighborhood groups, working within government. And one of the great strengths that I bring to this position is my ability to work with other levels of government, to work with state government in a bipartisan way, to bring back resources to the city of Pittsburgh, to work with the federal government. I supported Barack Obama 5 years ago when he ran in the primary. I have good connections in Washington. Pittsburgh needs to maximize its opportunities. It can only do that with good, solid leadership from a mayor. I'm running for mayor because I love this city. I'd be honored to be your mayor, and I ask for your vote next Tuesday on May 21st. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the WESA Mayoral Forum. Our engineer is Russ Lloyd. Senior news editor, Mark Newtbar. Director of Content and Programming, Tammy Terwelp. Production assistance from Marcus Charleston and Heather McLean. Audio of this forum will be archived at WESA.FM. Thanks to the League of Women Voters of Greater Pittsburgh and to those in attendance at the Community Broadcast Center. Now, let's thank our candidates for appearing at this forum. Pittsburgh Councilman William Peduto, former Pennsylvania Auditor General Jack Wagner, and State Representative Jake Wheatley. I'm Kevin Gavin. Remember to vote Tuesday. This has been a public affairs presentation of 90.5 WESA Pittsburgh.